the studios of 2RPH in Sydney. This is 30 Laps with Dick. I'm Richard Lyon. Welcome to this week. Well, it all happened in 1976. Concorde entered service, cutting transatlantic flying time to just 3.5 hours. Apple kicked off with Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak. The first laser printer was introduced by IBM, the IBM 3800. NASA unveiled its first space shuttle, called the Enterprise. 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover by Paul Simon was released. David Bowie's effort for that year was Golden Years. And the great, late Phil Lynott and Thin Lizzy, The Boys Are Back in Town, which will always be the start season music for the NRL in my book. And the Alpha we're going to talk about today was built all this week in 30 laps. Yep, the 1976 Alpha Spider. And how about this? A standard 1979 Corolla sells for $12,750. Let's get a glimpse of this week in 30 laps. Crikey, a 79 Corolla for nearly $13,000. Let's find out what that's all about at some stage, shall we? Let's start with drive.com.au. This is hot off the press from Ben Zachariah. This was on the 5th of March this year, 2021. MG has broken into the top 10 for Australian new car sales in February 2021 for the first time ever, finishing in 8th position ahead of Volkswagen and behind Nissan. Is the first time in Australian automotive history a Chinese brand has made it inside the top 10. According to official data released by the Federal Chamber of Automotive Industries, or FCAI, if you're in the know, the brand led the way for Chinese models, selling 3,017 MG models last month, an increase of more than 160% compared to the same period last year. It's a trend echoed across all Chinese-made vehicles, with GWM, formerly known as the Great Wall Motors, and Haval, posted a 170% increase in sales compared with the same time last year. Another one, LDV, posted a 79% increase on the back of updates to its 260 Ute and the arrival of a new large van. China was our fourth largest source of new motor vehicles, with a total of 5,013 vehicles reported as sold in Australia during February, behind South Korea at 12,305, Thailand at 17,458, and Japan at 29,438. In the second month in a row, Chinese vehicles have outsold models from Germany and the United States. The data follows 2 years of strong growth for Chinese manufacturers, with more than 30,000 vehicles sold in 2020, a 70.9% increase on 2019. GWM and LDV together make up 5.9% of the light commercial segment, closing in on Mazda, with 6.1% of the market, and beating Nissan with 4.5% share. How about that? And that was Ben Zachariah from drive.com.au on the 5th of March. So we move on to the Alfa Romeo, recapturing a much-loved Alfa Romeo Spider. This is by Alistair Clements, and it comes from Classic and Sports Car magazine of February 2021. If there's anything that gets close to Imogen Payne's passion for her collection of 13 rabbits, it's her 1976 Alfa Romeo Spider. So much so that she's even named her prize Belgian hares, Malcolm and Deirdre, after the couple that inspired its purchase. I grew up in South Oxfordshire, and when I was almost 12, my best friend's uncle Malcolm bought his wife Deirdre an alpha spider in white, she explains. I was a real tomboy, mad about football and cars, and I was smitten by it. He drove us over the local hills, going like the clappers, and I knew from then on that's the car I wanted, a spider. It just stuck with me. Fast forward to the mid-1980s. And after persuading her mother to buy a Matra Simca Bagheera and then getting herself a Mini as her first car, Payne began looking for her dream spider in earnest. I went to see a Triumph Stag that was up for £3,500, she recalls, but it was brown and I didn't like it. Then I bought this from a character in St John's Wood for £2,600. Built in South Africa. In December 1976, the 2-litre spider was exported to the UK in 77 and was registered in August 78 before being sold to its first owner. Although still fairly young, it had led a hard life. It was 6 years old when I got it, and I was told that its first owner had been a big bloke in St Albans who had burnt out the engine. The motor was knackered, so we replaced it with an engine from a brand new GTV that had been written off. I lived in London at the time, she concludes, so it was kept on the street in Chelsea, for years, and everyone bumper parked back in those days. I got so sick of the nose being caved in that I eventually fitted a protective bumper bar. In those days, it was my daily driver, until eventually my then-husband got an Alpha sports wagon through his business. We chose an Alpha so we could sneak the bills on this car through the company car. It was my everyday car for 10 years, until I needed something more grown up and larger, because Payne's day job is as a sculpture restorer. I once went to a Canterbury auction and bought an Orientalist marble grey gypsy girl, she continues. Because this was my only car and I didn't want to pay shipping fees, I put the base of the sculpture in the footwell, reclined her in the seat and put the seat belt around her. Oh boy, but eventually I got a BMW Estate as my third car. The Alpha continued living on the road, however, much to the chagrin of her neighbours. One was an evil old man who kept running a key down it until I reported it and the police gave him a telling off. Then in 1997, I bought an old bacon factory in Kennington, which meant I could finally bring it under cover. With the car being offered a bit of protection at last, Payne could attend to the various bumps and scrapes it had received over the years, and the paint was refreshed in its original hue of verde pino. Pine green. It had that old little prang and one drunk guy kicked the door in when it was on the street, she recalls. I had to run after him and make a citizen's arrest. Sounds like quite a girl, eh? But I looked after it and it always wanted to be spingly spangly. Her words, not mine. So I took out the plastic seats and put in leather. Then I got a new gear knob. It was looked after by Ian Ellis. He was a male model at the time, so I was always very happy taking it to him. Slowly the Alpha became more used and more sparingly, until the time came when Payne made the heart-wrenching decision to part with it after 30 years. Sitting in London traffic with the roof down and breathing in fumes was no fun. Then it got blocked in at home and sat there gathering dust. It became a bit of a pain. Ian had asked me a few times if I would think of selling it. Then, in 2014, he told me about a chap who was looking for an S2 Spider. We'd met years ago at a local squash club, and he remembered my car. So I sold it.
The problem is all inside your head, she said to me. The answer is easy if you take it logically. I'd like to help you in
your struggle to be free. There must be 50 ways to leave your lover.
Or 50 ways to leave your alpha. He was the right person for the car, but I still wept as it left. Then went down to Bellstaff and bought myself a jacket. I wore that more during the first 2 years than I'd driven the car, so at first I didn't regret my decision. In 2016, however, I moved back to Oxfordshire, and the country sparked pangs of longing for her beloved Alfa Romeo. I really don't know what triggered it, Payne ponders, but it may have been when a friend bought a Jensen Interceptor. Good God. I decided I needed another Alfa, so I started looking for one in early 2019. I saw a few, but none of them were my spider. Most were red, and it had to be green. So I started looking at modern sports cars instead, and even test drove a Jaguar F-Type, but couldn't really afford it. 3 times I composed a text to the new owner of my old spider to ask if I could have first dibs on the car if he decided to sell it, but each time I chickened out sending it. Just as it seemed as if the chance to acquire another Alfa might have passed, destiny stepped in. I happened to be in London visiting my hairdresser, Biagio, Payne explains. He's a real enthusiast, and I was telling him how much I missed my old car. I met a friend at the park for a sandwich afterwards and was just saying goodbye when this green spider drove past. I leapt into the road, waving my arms frantically, shouting, "That's my car! That's my car!" Incredibly, by pure chance, the Alfa's new owner happened to be passing. As he pulled over to have a chat, just at that moment, a cyclist came past and said, "Nice Alfa." And I thought, yep, that's why I need it back. It wasn't the final piece of serendipity to strike Payne that day. I told him how much I missed the car and that I wanted it back, and was amazed when he told me he needed to raise some money to fund the restoration of his Alfa Giulietta. So he had listed the spider for sale the previous evening. It gives me goosebumps just thinking about it. If I'd been a week later, I would have missed the car. It was fate. With another potential suitor coming to see the spider later that day, Payne immediately agreed to pay the asking price, returned a few days later to pick it up, and has been floating on air ever since. I gave him £3,000 more than I'd sold it to him for, but he had spent £6,500 over the last 6 years rebuilding the gearbox, replacing the crossmember and a few other things, she says. It was a great deal because it drives much better now, and it's just so pretty. Every time I walk away from it, I glance back and think how lovely it looks. It's the mother and Alfa reunion in this case, folks. I've driven it more in the past 4 weeks than I did in the 4 years before I sold it, and it's heaven on earth to have it back. The country roads around here are wonderful. They're what the Alfa was made for, and I can't stop smiling. Although the Alfa has had a few changes in recent years, most of them for the better, it's still very much the car she owned and loved for 3 decades. The wheels have been replaced by period alloys, and I'm hoping to get the original steels back because I'd picked out the details on the hubcaps in red, white and green. There's no way I'll let the spider go now. My nieces are half Italian, so I've told them I'll leave it to them in my will and they can fight over it. Whoever wins that fight will land themselves a lovely car. This is the car that is used and enjoyed rather than mollycoddled. It's a 2-litre twin cam, and it's on the button. It fires readily with just a blip of throttle to prime its twin Dell'Orto DHLA 40 carbs. The reclined seats are comfortable. The view ahead evocative, I should say, through the wood-rimmed three-spoke wheel to the two large cowled Jaeger dials, the 8,000 RPM rev counter hitting the eagerness of this archetypal Italian sports car. Building on the success of the 2000 and the Giulietta Spiders, the long-running 105 series Spider was born in 1966, as the achingly pretty boat-tailed Dietto, styled by Pininfarina. With a shape developed from the 1956 GC3000 Superflow concept car by Aldo Broveriani. Starting life with a 1570 109 brake horsepower version of the iconic Lambretti design twin cam engine, it would soon be joined by an 89 brake horse 1290cc Junior, while the Spider itself grew to 1750cc and the definitive 133 brake horsepower 1962cc 2000 arrived in 1971. That final engine arrived a year later after the model received its first update to produce the S2, such as Payne's example, with the revised rear suspension and the squared-off cam tail. In this form, it would run for more than a decade until the rubber-tailed S3 of 1982. Plant the throttle and the tail squats on as the rasping 2-litre delivers genuinely rapid pace. Its rebuilt 5-speed box is the smoothest I've experienced in a 105 series Alpha, while the accurate, well-weighted steering and subtle ride are aided by the sitting-on period-correct Michelin XAS tyres. Far from being in concourse condition, the Alpha feels a little lived in, with any ugly modern stereo mounted beneath the govbox. Or that's with an ugly modern stereo mounted beneath the govbox. But that older repaint still presents superbly, and it drives as well as any example I have driven. Payne has plans to convert the factory radio that still sits in the centre console to modern internals and now looks forward to lightly fiddling the car as she rebuilds her long-term relationship over the decades to come. It's a fairy tale, she says, gazing back over her shoulder at the little Alfa Romeo as it cools itself in the driveway. The way it came back to me was quite unbelievable. It still makes me smile every time I think about it. What a great story, hey? Recapturing a much-loved Alfa Romeo Spider. And they are truly a beautiful-looking car, there's no doubt about that. And this came from Classic and Sports Car magazine. It was written by Alistair Clements, and it appeared in the 11th of February 2021 edition.
Slip sliding away, slip sliding away.
And as she plants her delicate little foot on the accelerator, she's slip sliding away down the gravel drive and out to the street. Bit of homework. Top speed was 118 miles per hour. It went 0 to 60 in 8.8 seconds. It's priced new in 1977, was £5,499. Its price now is between £15,000 and £30,000, depending on the condition. So how about that? Well, we go back to Ben Zachariah now from the drive.com, the Sydney Morning Herald motoring section of the 9th of March, this 2021. And let's talk about this fangled Corolla that's gone for all this money. A low mileage 79 Toyota Corolla has sold at auction for twice its original purchase price, with a virtual hammer falling on a final bid of $12,750. Rick Fowler from Collecting Cars Australia told Drive the untampered condition of the Corolla contributed to its healthy price. "We consigned the Corolla because it was in granny spec, with just 31,000 kilometres and no modifications. It qualifies as an entry-level collector car, Mr. Fowler said. Cars in this type of condition will always find a buyer, particularly as the car collecting market continues to grow and attract a younger audience. While Holden and Ford muscle cars from the same era have been asking six and seven figure sums, it's believed $12,750 is one of the highest prices paid for a 1970s Toyota Corolla in original condition. The KE55 Corolla sedan, which was built at AMI Toyota's Port Melbourne factory, offers the new owner a total of 45 kilowatts from its 1.3-litre 4KC four-cylinder engine, powering the rear wheels via a three-speed automatic transmission. Originally delivered by Le Mans Toyota in Melbourne for approximately $6,240, the wearing period green correct garden state number plates, it was wearing, I beg your pardon, the correct garden state number plates, this particular Corolla was the luxury CS variant, offering buyers carpet, reclining cloth seats and a clock. It's a real time capsule and it is sure to bring back great 70s and 80s memories for the buyer to be a popular car at car clubs and events, Mr. Fowler said. How about that, hey? Good old granny came good with a car that she used to drive to church on Sunday. Some member of her family's made a tidy clean-up, I would say. Thank you to Ben Zachariah from drive.com.au on the 9th of March 2021 for his story on this 1979 Corolla.
Why am I soft in the middle now? Why am I soft in the middle? The rest of my life is so hard. I need a photo opportunity. I want a shot of redemption. Don't want to end up a cartoon in a cartoon graveyard. Bone digger, bone digger.
Thank you this afternoon to Mr. Paul Simon. I think it must be Carfax time. And we'll stay in New Zealand. We won't stay in New Zealand because we haven't been in New Zealand. We'll stay in Australia, the home of our Toyota Corolla. And we'll talk about the energy polarizer. GM's Australian division Holden had a performance arm called the Holden Dealer Team, or HDT, run by the enigmatic race car driver Peter Brock. In 1986, Brock began to install a gadget dubbed the energy polarizer into the HDT vehicles. The machine contained crystals and magnets and epoxy resin that, he claimed, improved the performance and handling of vehicles through aligning the molecules. GM was not impressed by this theory and a total lack of any evidence-based benefits and dropped its association with Brock. It set up the Holden Special Vehicles instead in conjunction with Scottish businessman Tom Walkinshaw. Brock died in an accident in 2006 during a rally aged 61, and he is remembered for being a great driver, but also the author of this energy polarizer. And an aside, Mr. Walkinshaw has signed an agreement with Michael Andretti, who is the son of Mario, who we talked about a couple of weeks ago in our as a up-and-coming motor racing driver at Monza, you may remember if you'd been listening. They formed a company a couple of years ago now, Walkinshaw Andretti United, and they have a supercar team in the Supercars series right here in Australia. You want one more? I'll give you one more. Weird car fact, because you've been such good people today. 20s plenty. In 1905, Rolls-Royce introduced a V8-powered car that was limited to just 20 miles an hour. That's because at the time, the maximum speed allowed in the UK was 20 miles per hour. so Rolls-Royce created a car that would keep its driver within the law, called the Legal Limit. Just one example of the 3,535cc machines were sold. And it was scrapped when Rolls-Royce bought the car back from its owner. As a result, none of these cars survive. One more for luck, the car company owned by Miss World. Gilburn sold the majority of their cars as part-assembled kits. Customers who did the remainder of the work did not have to pay purchase tax. In many ways, the company's history was more colourful than the cars. In 1968, a Welsh company called Ace Holdings, the world's largest slot machine maker, acquired Gilburn. They in turn were taken over a year later by Mecca, who not only ran bingo halls, but also the Miss World competition. Miss World was a rival beauty pageant organisation to Miss Universe, and that was formerly owned by one D. Trump of New York. So three car facts, one Australian, one English, and another one English, with a hint of Donald Trump America. Thankfully, those hints are quietly disappearing. And that would appear to be all we have time for this afternoon. It's been interesting, hey? We've been all over the place. We've been in Milan with Alfa Romeo and their wonderful spider. We've been listening to Paul Simon and my appalling puns about his music, but they fitted in with the story, didn't you think? Except for the last one, of course. We've had some weird facts. We've learned about a 1979 Toyota Corolla. So have a look at that one in your dear old granny's garage. If she can't drive it anymore, it might be worth something. If it's been driven by one lady owner on her way to church, it's bound to be worth more than you paid for it. And we also looked at those Chinese cars that are coming here in droves and being sold. Yes, MG is owned by a Chinese car company. Who would have thought, hey? All those guys in the 60s driving around in their midgets, they'd be spinning in their graves and their cheese cutter hats. Caps, I say caps. Thanks very much for your company today. The show's written and produced in the Sydney studios of 2RPH for the 2RPH network. I'm Richard Lyon. As usual, I've enjoyed very much this afternoon bringing this to you. We'll talk again next week about something completely different. Until then, bye for now.